A Crisis of Housing by Bronwyn Carver. In May of 2015, after 15 years of renting the same apartment in Portland, Oregon, raising three daughters, bearing beloved family pets, and celebrating all the occasions one celebrates, our landlord informed us that they would be raising the rent. Rent at this time for the two-bedroom apartment in inner southeast Portland, Oregon, was $850 a month. My new amount? $1,625. That is $1,625. Now, let me state this amount for the older apartment with the same old carpet that the friends who lived there before my family tread upon, the old cabinets, and the hidden black mold was not worth the dollar value placed upon it. It was also completely out of my and my husband's price point. I was just able to make the rent on the money I earned, pay some bills, buy food, and the husband covered the remainder. Yet, my husband was about to lose his employment, and mine was about to be made redundant. Still, I refused to give up. We went to court to try to mediate some possible outcome, but the landlord's eldest son refused to budge on the new amount, and hence we agreed to vacate the premises at the beginning of June in order to avoid an eviction on my record. We proceeded to sell belongings, pack treasures and heirlooms, memories and the ilk, into the minivan we owned. I was thankful that all my daughters were grown and out of the home by now. Meanwhile, we continued searching for other places to rent. On that journey, we could not find anything for less than $900 for 200 square feet. We also had three cats with us. And places were requesting pet rent? What? I'm sorry, but my cats were unemployed and could not pay their rent. I informed one complex of such a problem that we looked at, as they wanted an additional $150 in said pet rent. It became apparent very quickly something had changed in the housing market. At this point, my husband and I thought we would just live in the van. It seemed logical. So, renting a storage space for the belongings, we moved into the van and started what would become a 9-year odyssey into homelessness. The first winter was one of the coldest, and during one night, parked in northwest Portland near an underpass, we crawled into bed, under every cover, pulled under the three cats, and kissed each other, telling each we loved the other, went to sleep, not sure we would wake in the morning. There was so much we learned that first year, including how to stay warm. Then, as addicts tend to do in stressful, uncopable situations, we relapsed. We camped in the van for 2 years, till tags expired, and with no money, the city towed the van. Setting up a tent, camping in far-seeing places became the norm. It is hard to put into words the nuances of homelessness, the constant threat of possessions being stolen by other homeless or being swept every few weeks and your possessions again being stolen. As it was, we lost the storage unit, left belongings throughout the Portland metro area like breadcrumbs, trying to make our way back to some remembrance of home, and still we tried to live a normal life. I tried to make the tent into a home, emulating what once was a sense of hearth, while my husband cared for the outside, keeping clean our slice of dirt. There are too many stories for the space given. We continued to live this way, coping, using to normalize this experience for almost 7 years, till my husband moved in with another. I endured this, endured, moved into another camp away from his, worked, remember who I was, and gradually gained insight and strength. I still saw my husband. We had been together too long to just stop. He was arrested, and while in custody got sober, and we spoke again about being together. He was released to a drug program. I went back on methadone because I did not want to be the reason for his relapse upon release. And as addicts do, after 1 month, he left treatment, came home. After, he went and got high first, though. He was home 1 week. 1 week. I went to work, kissed him goodbye, and was called on the phone as I got off the max that he was not breathing. He had, of course, added to the statistics and overdosed. Brian passed away at the age of 44, September 3rd, 2022. We had been together 21 years. I relapsed as addicts do when facing life we had not been shown how to weather. I remained homeless another 2 years, knowing the person who had my back, protected me, was lost, gone from this mortal coil, never to return. In November of 2023, I was informed by one of the volunteers that came into the camps with supplies that Section 8 would be running a lottery for 2,000 vouchers. I was driven down to the place where I could put in an application on the last day. In December, I went back onto methadone with every conviction that if I was awarded a voucher, I would need to be sober to afford living inside. In December, I received my award letter, first saying I was waitlisted, then the week after with the voucher. I had till February 2024 to use the voucher. In a whirlwind of sobriety and searching, I did find an apartment, on my terms, where I wanted to live with my cats, who became certified emotional support animals. However, Section 8 covers rent only, deposits, fees, those I would have to cover. I crowdfunded to make the deposit, twice, since there was an unexpected amount additionally requested to hold the apartment that would then be used as a credit. But I did it and moved into the one bedroom with my cats in February 2024. I have lived here 17 months. I have planted outside, grown a garden, furnished my home, and am thankful I have it. I pay my bills, am catching up on taxes. I remain sober and have gotten medical procedures that needed to be done, but without housing, I was unable. I have a door that locks, with water to clean my body and refresh my soul. I feel more human. Forward to today, August 11, 2025, and I am again facing the real possibility of losing this security. I am in the position of using my voucher up in the next 7 months as this regime, I mean administration, has concluded that those who are poor or formerly homeless have only 2 years available to them through the Section 8 HUD voucher program. To say that it was never intended to be a long-term payment of rent is rewriting the language and intent of creation for this most needed social program. It is scary enough to think I may lose my medical insurance since I receive Medicaid, or that I may have to eat perhaps once a day should I lose food assistance, but to punish me by taking away my housing. As a 60-year-old, 17-month housed, formerly 9 years homeless woman seems to be a cruel joke. A reality of security and loss to others receiving this assistance, single mothers, fathers, those out of foster care, those with disabled children, how in the truest sense of decent judgment does one believe this will force those to seek greater employment? The truth is, most work some sort of job. You still need to pay for partial rents or utilities, transportation costs, etc., etc. But to rent a place in today's market is a Herculean task that is unrealistic for many of those who receive HUD assistance. This is why we are on this program, one that houses just a fraction of those who are entitled to be housed. I am appalled. The lack of compassion toward human beings, those who have lived a life of poverty, decent people trying to navigate a world that has shut them out all their lives, even when they have tried. And now, this pending doom is a disaster for so many. It will swell the homeless population, with some of whom may have never been homeless, children living on the streets, elderly, those who have mental health care, all stand to lose the security housing provided. I am unable, as of this writing, to pay rent. I work part-time as a vendor of Street Roots, a street paper sold in Portland, Oregon. I write, am a speaker when requested and participate where I can to earn enough money to cover the difference in my bills, but to tell me that I would need to pay the rent on my apartment at $1,039 would be a real stretch for me. I have ongoing health and mental health issues. I am still in therapy for the trauma of living outside. Besides, who would hire a 60-year-old woman with no job history for the last 10 years? Existential dread is real for me. I do not wish to live outside again. I am unable to maintain my sobriety, mental health, physical well-being, possessions, and hygiene. I am unwilling to trade my locked door for the flap of a tent door once more.